ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सर्वजगता ईश्वरो भन्द मोक्षयो ठं त्वं अर्चन्ति कुशला प्रपनारति हरं गुरुम्।
O Lord, you are the cause of bondage and liberation of the entire universe because you are its ruler. Those who are advanced in spiritual consciousness surrender unto you, and therefore you are the cause of mitigating their distresses, and you are also the cause of their liberation. We therefore worship your lordship, purport by his divine grace.
A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Actually, Lord Vishnu maintains and accomplishes all good fortune. If one has to take shelter of Lord Vishnu, why should the demigod take shelter of Lord Shiva? They did so because Lord Vishnu acts through Lord Shiva in the creation of the material world. Lord Shiva acts on behalf of Lord Vishnu. When the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita that he is the father of all living entities, Aham Bija Pratapita, this refers to actions performed by Lord Vishnu through Lord Shiva. Lord Vishnu is always unattached to material activities, and when material activities are to be performed, Lord Vishnu performs them through Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is therefore worshipped on the level of Lord Vishnu. When Lord Vishnu is untouched by the external energy, he is Lord Vishnu. But when he is in touch with the external energy, he appears in his feature as Lord Shiva. In this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find, by the desire and guidance of Lord Sri Vishnu, the demons and the demigods together, on the pretense of great crisis in their life, are approaching Lord Shankar. And in their prayers to Lord Shiva, they are approaching him with the same words of praise as they would praise the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Of course, we know that Lord Shiva has a very, very special and unique position. He is a gunavatar when he appears in this world. But beyond his manifestation in this material creation, Lord Shiva is none other than the Supreme Lord Vishnu, but just as explained in Brahma Samhita, when milk is touched by a culture, it becomes yogurt, and therefore it eternally becomes different than milk, different qualities, although it is essentially the same substance. Similarly, when Lord Vishnu accepts the influence of the external energy upon himself, he becomes Lord Shiva. In this way, they are simultaneously one and different. The living entity is jiva-tattva, but Lord Shiva is never to be considered as jiva-tattva. He is considered to be Shiva-tattva. He is in a category of his own. He is Vishnu, but has eternally manifested in such a way that he does not exhibit the same qualities as Vishnu. But Lord Shiva is considered the Param Vaishnav, the Supreme Vaishnav, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu, that there is no Vaishnav who is greater than Lord Shiva. In his position, he is taking the role of a devotee of Lord Narayan. And therefore, all Vaishnavas of all bona fide sampradayas worship Lord Shiva as the greatest of all devotees. In Vrindavan, sometimes we see the murti of Lord Shiva sitting in his traditional pose in the lotus position, sitting in meditation or samadhi. And of course, in Vrindavan, their idea is that Lord Shiva is meditating on the divine leela of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. In this way, he is constantly immersed. His mind is constantly fixed on the lotus feet of Lord Shamsundar. So one who takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord becomes most dear to the Lord. And if one wants to actually give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one must first offer his respects and gain the blessings of such a great soul. In fact, Lord Sri Ramchandra himself, at the holy place of Rameshwaram, at the time of the battle with Ravana at Sri Lanka, Lord Sri Ramchandra, he worshipped Lord Shiva. And this is a cause of great bewilderment to many persons, that if Lord Ramchandra is the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, and Shiva is his devotee, why is he worshipping him as such? Because the Lord takes great pleasure in worshipping his devotee. Just as in Dwaraka, when Sudama Vipra came to the home of Krishna, Krishna also worshipped this Brahman. He washed Sudama's feet with his own lotus-like hands. And Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, with a chamara, fanned him to give him pleasure. So similarly, at Rameshwaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead worshipped his devotee, Lord Shiva, with great, great love. To show the glory of the devotee, the first offense to the holy name is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to uplifting others by propagating the holy name. The Lord himself worships his devotee. So what is our position to disrespect such a great soul? Api chet sutaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadhureva samantabhya samyababhishipohisha. Krishna says in the 9th chapter of Gita that even if one commits the most abominable activities, if such a person is my devotee, I consider him a sadhu. So what is your position to question and justify blasphemy of such a person? So this is a person engaged in abominable activities. Krishna considers him saintly and offers him all respect. What to speak of a pure devotee who is dedicated in body, mind, and words to the service of the lotus feet of the Lord? How exalted, how magnanimous, how worshipable is such a person's lotus feet? Therefore, to even accidentally offend such a person is very, very dangerous. What to speak of willingly? Therefore, one should be very, very careful. Vaishnava aparad is considered the mad elephant offense. It may take you lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes to develop your garden of bhakti. And if a mad elephant comes into that garden, within a moment the whole garden is torn to pieces. So similarly, by offending the great souls, all of our spiritual progress is uprooted, at least for the time being. And we see in the case of Lord Shiva, Daksha, during the sacrifice that he was performing, he disrespected Lord Shankar. How did he disrespect? He was seeing him according to material vision. Archye Vishnu Shiladira Gurusho Naramatira Vaishnavi Jati Bhuti. It is said that one who sees the worshipable deity to be made of wood or stone, one who sees the Charanamrita to be simply ordinary water, one who sees the Guru to be an ordinary man with material vision, or one who sees the Vaishnava belong to any particular country, caste, or creed, such a person is of hellish mentality. His consciousness is born of the hellish planets. So this is the great caution that one must always be aware of, not to ever see the great souls with material vision. Daksha was saying that here is Lord Shiva. The fact is he's always associating with ghosts, with both persons who are deeply drenched in the mode of ignorance. Usually you can tell a man by his company. He engages in activities that are apparently in the mode of ignorance. He smokes the hashish, smokes the ganja. He also wears crematorium ashes on his body, which is an activity of worship in the mode of ignorance, tamaguna. He frequently goes to those places of crematoriums, which are places which are untouchable. In the Vedic system, the traditional Vedic system, if you're at a crematorium to see a funeral, you're not even allowed to go into the temple for so many weeks. Lord Shiva, he does his bhajan at those places. He wears serpents around his neck. So Daksha, who actually, unfortunately, was too familiar with Lord Shiva. Familiarity breeds contempt. This is a great danger. People who become too familiar with the great soul, especially the spiritual master, their tendency is to see him very ordinary, to start judging him according to material calculations, and then gradually commit offenses. So Daksha happened to be the father-in-law of Lord Shiva. His daughter, Sati, was Lord Shiva's wife. So Daksha, therefore, was seeing Lord Shiva due to this familiarity in a very material way. Rather than seeing the depth of his great surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was simply seeing these external, apparent contradictions in Lord Shiva's behavior. So therefore, Daksha began to insult Lord Shiva. And due to this offense, he lost everything. He lost his fame, he lost his very daughter. She could not tolerate it. This is the nature of a devotee. A devotee cannot tolerate hearing Vaishnava aparad. Sati was so much angered and so much distressed by hearing the worshipable Lord, her Guru Maharaj, her husband, Lord Shiva, being insulted, that she took her very life. She set her own body on fire through the yogic process because she was thinking that this Daksha, being my relation, I don't want any relation to him anymore. He is my father. He has given me this body. I don't want anybody that has any relationship with him. He has polluted my ears. He has polluted my heart. And this is actually the seriousness that a devotee sees the Vaishnava aparad. It is said in the scripture that if one is hearing a Vaishnava being offended, one must either soundly defeat that person in argument, shut his mouth, or one must take that person's life, or one must cut that person's tongue out and then take one's own life because his heart has been polluted by hearing this aparad, or one must immediately leave the place. So Sati, after hearing the contaminating words, decided that this life was no longer fit because she had heard such offense to a devotee, so she decided to burn it within the fire of yoga. And then, of course, Daksha, he had his head cut off and was given the head of a goat as a reaction. Even though we have to understand, Daksha was a very highly religious man. In many ways, he was a guru in his own right. He was not just an ordinary person. He was one of the Prajapatis. That means he was very highly learned in the Shastra. He was performing tremendous, tremendous sacrifices exactly according to the Vedas. He was factually more religious and more spiritually minded than practically anyone today. But even such a person in such an exalted position, due to the offense against a great soul, he was punished very severely by the mercy of the Lord. And throughout the Vedic literatures, we find how intolerable the Lord sees the offenses against his devotees. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is the story of Gopal Chapal. Gopal Chapal, he offended Srivas Thakur. He was considering Srivas Thakur. After all, he was a grihastha. He had children. He had a wife. What's so great about him? He saw him to be an ordinary man. And he accused him of being a worshipper of goddess Durga for material purposes. He even arranged all the Durga Puja paraphernalia one night outside of his house. He brought the townspeople and said, "You see, he's worshipping Durga." And Srivas Thakur said, "Yes, of course I'm worshipping Durga." Srivas Thakur was not the slightest bit concerned for his name and fame. But the next day, Gopal Chapala came down with leprosy. And of course, although he was a very wealthy and very religious man in his own right, he was banned from living in the community of Navadvip. He had to stay on the bank of the Ganges alone as a beggar. And when Lord Chaitanya one day was passing by, Gopal Chapala fell at his feet begging, "Forgiveness, please. I'm sorry for what I have done. Please cure me from this horrible suffering disease." And Lord Chaitanya just looked at him with great anger and said, "Because you have offended my devotee, there is no salvation for you. You suffer. Not only in this life, for millions of births you suffer." And Lord Chaitanya just walked on. The Lord is all merciful, but not to one who offends his devotee. And then sometimes later, Lord Chaitanya was walking by that area again. And Gopal Chapala, he was actually genuinely repentant for the offense he had committed to the Lord's devotee, Srivas Thakur. And he begged, "Please, whatever you want to do with me, let me never offend your devotees again." And then the Lord said, "If you get the blessings of Srivas Thakur, then again you can be saved." So Gopal Chapala went to the feet of Srivas Thakur. And with a heart of genuine sincerity, not just superficially, but with genuine sincerity and gravity, he begged Srivas Thakur, "Please forgive me." And of course Srivas Thakur was saying, "What have you done?" But just the fact that he went through that process with a sincere heart, not just as a formality, but he was really repentant, the Lord cured him of his leprosy. And Gopal Chapala actually became a very good devotee of Srivas Thakur and the other Vaishnavas. Similarly, we read of Gopal Chakravarti. He insulted publicly Haridas Thakur. And because of that insult, he also obtained leprosy. His fingers fell off. He lost everything, suffering a terrible condition of life. There are so many examples. In the Bhagavatam, we have the story of Duryodhana Muni, such a great yogi, such a great religious person. But due to his offense against Ambarish Maharaj, there was no salvation anywhere, even at the feet of Vishnu. Narottam Das Thakur has prayed that, "My dear Lord Govinda, you are tolerant even against offenses to yourself. If one offends Krishna by chanting the holy name, one can be purified. But if one offends his devotee, there's no salvation for that person. Unless that person completely humbles himself at the feet of such a great soul." And Krishna, how much could he emphasize it? His own family, the Yadu dynasty, he arranged for them to leave the planet as a reaction of an offense against the devotees. Some of the members of the Yadu dynasty, they dressed Samba up as a pregnant woman because they wanted to ridicule some of the great sages, Narada Muni, Parvat Muni, and some others. And they brought Samba before Narada Muni and the others. They said, "Oh, great sages, you are seers of past, present, and future. Tell us, will this young lady give birth to a boy or a girl?" And they were thinking, whatever they said, then they would just reveal that he was really Samba and just start laughing at these great sages. Thinking, "We are Kshatriyas, we are very powerful, and these Brahmins." They were seeing them in an ordinary way. Narada Muni understood their mentality. It was offensive against Vaishnavas. So Narada Muni said, "You will give birth to a lump of iron that will be the cause of the destruction of the entire Yadu dynasty." And they became very much afraid. And then right then and there, from Samba's stomach came a lump of iron. So Prabhupada explains in the first canto in a purport that this is the gravity of an offense against a devotee. That Krishna showed that even if you are his own family members, the greatest people on earth, the Yadu dynasty, your whole dynasty will be destroyed if you offend a devotee. In the story of Ramchandra Khan, due to his offense against Srila Haridas Thakur, not only he was put in prison, all of his wealth was plundered, his whole family members were put in prison, and the whole village and city that he was living in was completely devastated. It is explained, offense against the devotee is so serious that not only you, but your family and your whole society around you has to pay the consequences. So we're giving these examples just to show how dear the devotee is to the Lord. And just as the Lord accepts so much offense when you offend his devotees, you can imagine how much pleasure he gains when you praise his devotee, when you glorify his devotee. Mad-bhakta-puja-vyadhika. Krishna told Uddhava that one who calls himself my devotee is not my devotee. The one who calls himself a devotee of my devotee, he is my most beloved devotee.
Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadad, yasya prasadanagati kuto.
One who attains the mercy of Guru gets the mercy of Krishna. One who cannot get the mercy of Guru, he cannot get the mercy of Krishna no matter what else he does. Krishna arranges so that he is not approached directly. He is approached through the grace of the great souls, the sadhus. So Lord Shiva is representing here the Supreme Spiritual Master, the great Vaishnava. And the glory of Lord Shiva that makes him so infinitely dear to Vishnu is about to be shown through this most wonderful pastime of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In order to show compassion to the fallen souls who are in great distress, Lord Shiva is about to drink the halahala, the great poison which has arisen from the ocean of milk. He is about to risk his life and accept a very torturous suffering condition. It is described that there is no superior service that one can offer to Lord Krishna than the willingness to suffer pain and to risk one's life to uplift others. Because Krishna is the Father, and he loves all of his children. And one who is willing to take great risk to rescue one of his children becomes the dearmost to his heart. It's like, even in this ordinary world, if a child is in great danger and somebody risks his life and even endures great, great pain and suffering to save the child, how dear that person would be to the father or mother. There would be no person more dear in the world. So similarly, this is the position of Krishna, that he loves each and every one of his parts and parcels infinitely. And one who is willing, even at the cost of imminent death or pain, to uplift even one of such persons, becomes the dearmost to the Lord. And therefore, Krishna says that one who instructs this transcendental knowledge to others is most dear to me, and there will never be anyone more dear to me. So to glorify such a person is the supreme glorification of the personality of Godhead. And of course, to glorify such a person means to glorify from one's heart, to glorify through one's activities, through one's life. Is there any questions? Yes? In the purport, Prabhupada explains like this. But that is not the subject of what we are discussing in class today. Is there any other questions? It's Canto 8, Chapter 7. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatatishitaya. Out of many, many persons,
one even endeavors for this knowledge, and out of those who endeavor, even hardly one know him in truth. It takes a very, very sincere soul to leave his pride behind and become the humble servant of the servant. The tendency is, if we have any inclination to not let go of our material pride, even in very high spiritual positions, we can become envious of someone who is doing great work. In the material world, we do not like anyone to do things that excel us. In spiritual circles, even though you may become quite spiritually advanced on one level, if you do not give up your pride, you will think like this. It will be intolerable for you to see someone else advancing or being more empowered than you. And therefore you try to put yourself first by tearing that person down. So we have to be very much on guard of this enemy of pride. It's the last of the enemies to leave us. Ahankar, false ego. To give up lust, to give up anger, to give up greed is very difficult. But after all these things are given up, still pride is a very, very powerful force within your heart. That's the most painful and difficult of all the anartas to give up. He didn't offend him. If you read the Bhagavatam, you find that that was Krishna's yoga maya. It wasn't due to envy. Krishna put him in a situation where it wasn't even hardly an offense. Put him in a situation because he wanted the Bhagavatam to be spoken. That was Krishna's arrangement. That had nothing to do with pride or envy. He was simply being used as a puppet in Krishna's hands so that the Srimad Bhagavatam would be spoken. Hare Krishna.